Oh, I spent some time talking about angels and the role that they have been given by God. We pointed out several things about their role relative to us, that they are for our good. They are the messengers of God who serve us. We talked about how they were involved in the giving of the old law. We talked a little bit about how they are at times angels of judgment. They are God's messengers bringing judgment. I keep the word that keeps popping into my head is executioners, and that's not really the one that I want. They are God's emissaries in executing judgment. Tonight we're going to talk a little bit about angels and the accountability that angels have for discharging the responsibilities that God has given them. So we've seen a little bit about the role, and if you don't follow the role that God gives you, that means that you're accountable to God and that you will suffer a judgment from God. So let's begin in 2 Peter. And I want to look at two sections of 2 Peter, the second chapter. The fourth verse is one that we think about quite a bit when we think about angels. And Peter says, if God did not spare angels when they sinned, but sent them to hell, putting them in chains of darkness to be held for judgment. And what that tells me is that they are accountable. And Peter's point here in 2 Peter is if God does that with angels, think about what he's going to do with you. You have a role that you've been assigned to play by God, just like angels were assigned a role. And if angels are reserved in hell until the time of judgment, what's that say about us? So I think that's Peter's point here. He takes that point and he expands upon it in the ninth verse. If this is so, then the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from trials and to hold the unrighteous for punishment on the day of judgment. This is especially true of those who follow the corrupt desire of the flesh and despise authority. Bold and arrogant, they are not afraid of evil views on celestial beings, but even angels, although they're stronger and more powerful, do not heap abuse on such beings when bringing judgment on them from the Lord. So they're going to bring judgment, but they're not going to heap abuse on those that are judged. Okay? Comments, thoughts about this passage? What do you see in this passage? Yeah, go ahead, Carol.
Well, it's to me, it just reminds me that the people who believe once saved, always saved, don't understand that if the angels can be punished because they stepped out of line, then there's no reason that we can't be punished for stepping out of line when we were in God's presence.
Okay.
It's often left people, I'm
Okay.
sorry, but.
Yeah, Ted.
The fourth verse that you referenced specifically talks about God punishing angels, but he gives us specific examples of God punishing those on this earth for disobedience. And he goes into that in the fifth, the sixth, seventh, and eighth verses, where he talks about Sodom and Gomorrah, where they were just wiped off the face of the planet, and talks about righteous Lot, who was saved from those cities who were wiped off the face of the planet. And what we can see from that is, if God is willing to do that to us, imagine what he will do to those spiritual beings who disobey him. And he's telling us that even those angelic beings who are eternal like God is, he's made them to be along with him as far as we can understand, even they fall under his will, just as we do.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's the point. Angels exceed us in power. That's true. They can do things that we can't do. They are, like Ted said, I think, created to be eternal. They're created like us, but they're created to be eternal. And if God is not going to spare them, he's not going to spare us. And he gives it, like Ted said, he gives illustrations of how God didn't spare people. And he makes the point, God's not going to spare angels either. So, yeah, angels are as accountable to God for discharging the role that was given to them as we are for discharging our responsibility. Responsibilities are different. What we're held accountable to is different. Just like I'm not accountable for the law that Nineveh was supposed to have responded to. Nineveh is held accountable to that law because that was given to Nineveh. Angels are held accountable to whatever God said to them. I don't know exactly what it was, but they had a job to do. They didn't do it. They're held accountable. Yeah.
It also reminds me of God's unchanging. What God sees as good is good. It doesn't matter whether you're an angel or a human. Good is good, and if you're not going to accept that, then that's what you get the punishment for. So.
Okay. Yeah, that gets back to the notion that good is what is defined by God as good. And it will always be good. Okay, so that does a lot, I think, in my mind, to establish the basis of ethics. Ethics is not something that I just get to describe. It's something that God describes. He gives me the role. And if we don't fill our role, we'll be held accountable as well as the angels were. So, if you are a husband and you do not care for your family, if you do not love your wife, God will hold you accountable. Because that's the role that he gave you to discharge. Okay? That's an awesome thing. And although we don't know a lot about what the angelic role was, what we know would indicate that God communicated it to them in some way and they didn't do what they were supposed to do. Okay? Now, I don't want to get into trying to figure out how they're reserved in hell at this point in time. I just can't. I haven't got my head wrapped around that just yet. Yeah, Ted.
I mean, you go any farther than verse 4. I mean, he says specifically what happened with them. They are in chains and darkness.
Yeah.
That's good enough.
Yeah. That's the best I can say about it. They are reserved in hell, or they were sent to hell, put in chains of darkness to be held for judgment. So, I don't think that this is an indication that they became at that point demons. They are still angels held in chains, and that may be a chain that's described in the book of Revelation. Yeah.
Well, that makes me think, you know, people talk about Satan being a fallen angel. Well, this says that a fallen angel is held by chains in hell. So it's
a I don't think Satan is a fallen angel.
No, I don't think I think that line proves that. Yeah.
No, I don't. I just don't think that that's the case. Now, Jesus did say, I beheld Satan falling like a stone from heaven. And we'll talk a little bit about that because we're going to talk about Satan. But I don't think he's saying, I don't think Satan, Jesus is making reference to this statement that Peter makes. Yeah, Ted?
Well, I looked at the book of Job to see that Satan is unique in that he could go from earth to heaven and talk directly with God. I mean, he had a conversation with him about this. So there's something unique about Satan that's different, that makes him set apart, and probably why he's one of the few named opposers of God, because there's something unique about it.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. We'll talk a little bit more about Satan later on in our discussion, but I don't, this passage, at least in my mind, does not indicate, and I think indicates to the contrary, that Satan is not an angel who stepped out of his role and was then sent down to earth to tempt people. I don't think that's what happened. Okay? These angels that didn't fulfill their role the way that they were supposed to are in hell, reserved in chains of darkness until the day of judgment. Okay. Look at Jude, first chapter. And we're going to look at verses 5-9. Can somebody read that? Jude 1, there's only one chapter in Jude. Jude, verses 5-9.
So you already know this, all this. I want to remind you that the Lord at one time delivered his people out of Egypt, but later destroyed those who did not believe. And the angels who did not keep their positions of authority, but abandoned their proper dwellings, these he has kept in darkness, bound with everlasting chains for judgment on the great day. In a similar way, Sodom and Gomorrah and the surrounding towns gave themselves up to sexual immorality and perversion. They serve as an example of those who suffered the punishment of eternal fire. In the very same way, on the strength of their dreams, these ungodly people pollute their own bodies, reject authority, and heap abuse upon celestial beings. But even the archangel Michael, when he was disputing with the devil over the body of Moses, did not himself dare to condemn him for slander, but said, "The Lord rebuke you."
Okay. What do you see in this passage that would help us to expand what we know from 2 Peter? Ron, you had your hand up?
No.
Okay. Just, yeah, Ted.
We definitely see that these angels were given positions of authority.
So okay.
They are authorized by God to do things that many others are not.
Okay. Now, did they do what they were supposed to do?
Some of them did not.
Some of them did not. Some did, some of them did not. Yeah, Carol.
It's the Archangel Michael. He said he was there to condemn, but not himself being as an angel condemning Satan, but because he was a emissary from God. So if you are going to be an emissary of God, you need to remember it's God's message and not your message that you're giving, or our angels are giving.
Okay. That may have been the crux of how they stepped out of their role. They didn't act as an emissary of God, but they took it upon themselves to act. And that's an extremely dangerous thing. And we're just as prone to doing that as angels were. Yeah, Terry.
Yeah, we're not supposed to judge people.
Okay.
You know, so it's very hard when your hackles get up and something really bothers you and whatever. It's, you know, it's hard to remember. You need to remember it's the Lord condemning. You don't have the right to do condemning.
That's right. That's right. Nor do you have the right to obligate God to condemn you. Or to condemn anybody else. So I think, at least in my mind, Jude kind of expands on Peter, and I know a little bit more about how they didn't stay in their proper position. They took it upon themselves to be God. And that's not their role. So, I mean, it's very, very important in my mind that you never take on a role that was not given you by God. And people tend to do that. And I'll just be honest about it. I think preachers do it a lot. Preachers take on the role of an elder when that's not their job. And they're more than willing to do that. And that's dangerous. So they may have a responsibility, they may have a role, but don't take the role that wasn't assigned to you. Never do that. Anybody else? Anything else? Okay. Let's go on to Hebrews, the second chapter. Now, as scary as Peter and Jude are, when you say God will not brook people stepping out of their role, and that's absolutely true. God reserves the angels that stepped out of their role in chains waiting for the day of judgment. But then there's Hebrews 2, and this is about us. And, you know, we were talking about whether angels are superior to men or men are superior to angels. I don't know. I can't answer that other than to say that the writer of Hebrews says that God made Jesus a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death. So Jesus becomes man, and that meant that he was a little lower than the angels. But it's also true that man has, an elevated status that angels don't have. And I kind of think of this in the same way that the apostle talks about we give honor to our wives as a weaker vessel. Mm-hmm. the fact that we are weaker does not diminish us, doesn't diminish our life. And somebody tried to explain that by saying, you know, you have some dishes in your house that are bone china, and they're very strong, and at the same time they're very easily broken.
Right.
So you don't get down the bone china when you're having a bunch of rambunctious teenagers in your house and you're trying to teach them about having good table manners. They're likely to break your bone china. Okay? It's the weaker, but because it's the weaker, we value it more and we keep it in the china hutch. We don't put that in the same place where we put our everyday dishes. And trust me, I have broken many everyday dishes. When I got married, my father-in-law gave me one bit of advice. He said, pick out the most expensive plate you own. And if your wife asks you to wash dishes, drop that one. You will never again be asked to wash dishes. And it, so far, it's worked. So here's Hebrews 2. Since the children have flesh and blood, he too, that's Jesus, he too shared in their humanity so that by his death he might break the power of him who holds the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by the fear of death. Death is Satan's ultimate tool to hold us in slavery. Can he do that to angels? Can he hold angels in slavery? Can Satan do this to angels, holding them in slavery because they're afraid of death?
No.
If they don't die, no. Satan has no power over angels. Has power over us, and he wields it. It's an illegitimate power, but we're so afraid of death that Satan uses our fear of death to control us. But he can't do that to angels. That's why he says in Hebrews 2 and verse 16, surely it is not angels he helps, that he is Jesus. Surely it's not angels that Jesus helps, but Abraham's descendants. So that this passage just kind of reinforces in my mind that angels, because they're not afraid of dying, can't be controlled by Satan. Now, you know, we could talk about whether we can be controlled by Satan in a legitimate sense or whether his control over us is illegitimate. I think it's illegitimate because he controls us with death. And in reality, death is just passing from this life into the next one. But Satan can't illegitimately control angels. And what that means to me is angels chose to leave their assigned role, just like we do. We choose to leave our assigned role. And if we do, then we're going to be held accountable, just like angels are. But angels had the right to choose. Satan couldn't control them. And in reality, Satan can't control us. However, we give in to it. Because his tool is death. And with angels, Satan doesn't have his tool. Other comments? Questions?
I don't remember if we had looked at Luke chapter 20 and verses 35 to 36, but that gives us a little bit of comparison between men and angels.
Okay.
And verse 35 says, but those who are considered worthy to attain to that age and the resurrection from the dead, neither marry nor are given in marriage, for they cannot die anymore, for they are like angels and are the sons of God. So they're like angels in that, okay, you've attained that eternal life, that spiritual nature, but you're also sons of God, something that sets us apart from angels. Angels are never called the sons of God, whereas we are adopted sons of God through the sacrifice of Christ Jesus.
Right. Right. And that's a wonderful blessing that we have. Absolutely. And one day, death will be destroyed. It will no longer be a tool that Satan can use. I can't wait for that day, personally, because I'm afraid of dying. Okay? Yeah, you can say what you want. I understand death is just passing from this life into the next one, and I understand that intelligently, intellectually, I understand that. I give assent to it. I'm terrified of dying. And Satan knows that. And he uses it. Okay? Let's look at one more passage, and then we'll have to call it a day. 1 Corinthians 6. This is an interesting passage because Paul doesn't explain what he means, really. He's dealing with an entirely different situation. He is not, at this point, dealing with the nature of angels or angels' accountability or where angels are or anything like that. He's dealing with an entirely different subject here in 1 Corinthians 6. He's dealing with brother that goes to law with brother. Okay? And he makes the point, ultimately, that you're better off being defrauded than you are asking someone who doesn't know about God to judge between you and your brother. Suffer yourself to be defrauded. Don't go get somebody from outside who doesn't understand what God expects. He says, the reason that you don't go get somebody from outside is that Christians understand what God expects. Christians understand that you do what's right because God said to do what's right. And there's not, probably not one judge in 100 who's going to tell you that. Now, I don't know every judge. And there are undoubtedly some who have an understanding of God, but for the most part, they don't. So this is what he says in 1 Corinthians 6. If any one of you has a dispute with another, do you dare to take it before the ungodly for judgment instead of before the Lord's people? You ought to be going and asking a brother to decide this question. There'll be disputes that arise. So you ask a brother to help settle the issue. Do you not know, he says, that the Lord's people will judge the world? And if you judge the world, are you not competent to judge trivial cases? Do you not know that we will judge angels? How much more the things of this life? Now, I wish I understood how we were going to judge angels better. Because That's, in part, that's the thrust of the argument that Paul is making. You're going to judge angels. Why do you need a better judge than Christians? Okay? So, angels are accountable. We've seen that. And they are going to be judged. And somehow Christians are involved in that judgment. Or could be. Anybody have a good, cogent explanation for 1 Corinthians 6 at verse 3? Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
I don't think we can have an explanation for that any more than we can have an explanation for what Peter talks about in the third chapter about the elements melting in fervent heat. The verse speaks for itself, but what that's going to look like, we have no idea. So I don't think we can rightly say we know exactly what this is talking about when we have not been put in the position to do so. Now, it could be that there are points in our lives where God calls on spiritual beings, messengers to help, and they choose not to do so. We may not know about that, but, you know, at the time or in this final judgment, that may come to our knowledge. And at that time, we could say, well, had that message been given to me, I may have made a different choice. So who knows? I don't think we can say anything about what this verse is specifically talking about until we're put in the situation that God is talking
about. Okay. Okay, good point. I just wish Paul hadn't used this as the crux of his argument for not taking a brother to court before the unbeliever. Yeah, Carol.
The only thing it makes me think of is that when you go to your brother, instead of going to court, you're going to God's law, to God's love.
Okay.
And if we are going to be in heaven with God, then we're applying God's law. And that's what the angels got in trouble with was not declaring God's law. So maybe it's just we are saying amen to what God says because okay. We're going to trust in God and his goodness.
Okay. Good point. Mandy?
Nothing, sir.
Nothing, just making a bid, huh?
Yeah.
Dean, you have a comment?
Nope.
Nope, just stretching. Okay, that's all I have for the accountability of angels. Next week, we'll begin a discussion, albeit a bit shorter, of demons, because we just don't have as much information about demons. But we'll talk about demons a little bit next week, and then we'll conclude with a discussion about Satan. Okay. Thank you for your attention and thank you for your comments. I know that at some point you may feel like I do and wish you had more information. We just don't. And so we act on the best information we have, and that's about all we can do.